Welcome, everyone. Today's podcast, The Importance of Cybersecurity, Real Threats to the Legal Industry, is brought to you by ILTA at iltanet.org. Today, our featured speaker is Jeffrey Brandt. He has over 30 years' experience in the field of legal automation. Jeff is a former Chief of Information and Knowledge Officer. He is currently serving as Principal of Brandt Professional Services, LLC. He's the editor of Law Technology Digest at Pinhawk, LLC, and is an advisory board member at Law Technology News. Jeff, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My first question is plain and simple. Why bother with security?
Well, that's a really great question. I mean, you can talk about the whys and wherefores, but it really is something that is so much in the news. You can't go by a single day without reading something about a security breach, a vulnerability, or some new aspect of security that has to be handled. And, aside from it's the right thing to do in terms of bothering with it, law firms have been called out by the FBI, by MI5 in the United Kingdom, as kind of the weak underbelly of corporate America in terms of security protocols and such. So justified or not, law firms are, if they weren't a target before, certainly are now as part of it. You've certainly got client demand. Look at the increasing number and sophistication of client audits. I mean, the audits that you get today come fast and furious. They're a lot more complex than they used to be. So, that's certainly an aspect. You also have the fact that the ABA, professional code, if you will, the model rules demand it. You've got, rule 1.1 on competent representation. You've got 1.6 on confidentiality. And the ABA even jump-started and increased 1.1 to talk about competence and meaning, the benefits and risk associated with relevant technology. And certainly as every firm advances with their technology, comes with that security risks as part of it.
Great, great information. Now, when you say security risk, that raises some hairs on some people. Should law firm professionals really be concerned with cyber attacks? And if so, why?
Well, there's a lot of things that they need to be aware of. I mean, we're, as you and I discussed in preparation for this, we could go on for days and days on different topics. So we're going to touch on just a few in this particular podcast. But, you've got things like phishing attacks, which are way more sophisticated than they have ever been, coupled with social engineering and the fact that, most people today with their smartphones and so on are simply bleeding information left and right that can be worked into an social engineering phishing attack. You've got cloned sites today that are, impossible to tell from the original. These are not your father's Nigerian scams. And a funny story related to that, probably 2 months ago, I got a totally classic Nigerian scam email. It was sitting in my spam filter, thanks to Google. But it was classic. The spelling mistakes, the awkward grammar, I forget exactly how much money I was supposed to have. So to me, this was just a classic. So I posted it on Facebook. And my nephew, who is 21, 22, wrote back, "Uncle Jeff, you're rich." And it's like, dude, no, I'm not. So that just gets into, whole new generations of people coming on board with their technology awareness, and what they know and what they aren't aware of. So, that just gets back into, the need to make sure that people are aware. Hacktivist, brand new term, is a biggie. Law firms represent unpopular people, unpopular organizations, and unpopular causes, Where it used to be that you would grab a sign and protest, now you can protest electronically. Sometimes it's pain in the rear more than it is malicious attack or stolen information, but still, hacktivism is a very big thing that law firms need to be aware of. You've got state-sponsored espionage. A Canadian firm a year or so ago was called on the carpet for that. Law firms have tons of information, intellectual property of their clients, that people would love to have access to. And again, with the FBI and MI5, as I mentioned earlier, calling law firms the weak underbelly, that's where the hackers are going, is after the law firms to get the information.
That is interesting, especially when you brought up Canada. I do remember the incident where a Canadian firm selling potash they were actually targeted by a nation state, you know, in this case, China.
Yeah, as the story goes, I'm not sure how much of it was actually ever proven, but China was interested in cornering the market, you know, getting, buying that metals plant, and they did everything they could to figure out what the negotiating posture was, what the information was, what the key points were. That's just one aspect of, you know, state-sponsored espionage.
Yeah, which certainly leads to law firms and law departments being vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. You look at what's being done today, what is still physical paper, what is electronic. You have issues with, at least I have issues with what I'll overly generalize as some of the younger generation simply just not being as aware of what information they're giving out. You know, another example that I can give, I worked for one law firm that had a Am Law 5 firm as its outside counsel. And I was working with them on an intellectual property matter. And, you know, it was an IP filing, actually. And those documents are huge. You know? So you get massive documents, massive number of documents. And poor paralegal that was ultimately assigned that ended up with, I believe we exchanged some 50 emails before everything was said and done. You know, here's what you need in three emails. Well, that one didn't go through, so I rejiggered, you know, the file attachments and put it over here. You know, so you look at that, and, you know, my question as a former CIO was, does that firm really know what information just left the firm? You know, are they confident that they could say, you know, where those IP documents and so on were? And the answer ultimately is no. So there's a lot of things that need to be done, a lot of, as information starts sailing back and forth in an even greater state, you know, velocity, if you will, of information being exchanged in email is just, again, going through the roof. And so it's very important that people be aware of the necessity for cyber awareness and security protocols.
Now that's an important point you make there, because some law firms have a treasure trove of information. But some would actually have a gold mine, you know, if I dare say, of information that would be valuable to someone.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've got everything from what information your client has, you know, whether it's technical documents like in IP area or stance or future directions, potential purchase and acquisitions. Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be pure stealing of information. You know, you have things like Sony where, was it super bad that salary information and so on got released? Yes, it was bad, but it was much more embarrassing, much more loss of esteem, loss of face, if you will. And that's something that, you know, no law firm wants to be the first firm in the news, you know, above the fold headline, if you will, that talks about how bad their breach was and what it did to their client or clients.
Right, and the credibility is called into question, which reaches across your entire marketing. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Well, you spend so much time trying to build your brand to be distinguished, and that's one way you wouldn't want to be distinguished from your fellow firms.
Wow, this is interesting stuff. So, Jeff, what can law firms and law departments do to protect themselves against these threats and threat actors?
Well, I'm a big believer in, you know, people, process, and technology, the three-legged stool, if you will, and I really do believe that it's in that order. So I think everything starts with user awareness. That's absolutely the best return on investment that you could possibly have. You know, training and education of your users. You know, that doesn't mean that you don't have the technology, you don't have the process, but if people aren't aware of why they should be using it, you could have the most platinum-plated technology in the world, and if people are not going to use it in the proper fashion, in the way it's expected, the way they should, they're going to try and bypass it, then, you know, it doesn't matter what you bought or how much you've spent. So as I said, I'm a big believer in return on investment of starting with user awareness. You know, part of that includes senior management education. You know, facts and figures, why it's important. We all know how much law firms are herd animals. So what your competition is doing in this area. You know, I'm also a big believer in making some sometimes dramatic statements to your senior management. You know, find a password cracker and run it against your internal passwords and throw that report on the executive committee's table during one of their meetings and say, you know, here it is. Here's the, I can tell you everybody's password in this room. How about we do something about security? There are a couple of firms I know that have conducted their own internal phishing exercises, you know, kind of a mild introduction to here's why you shouldn't do what you think you're doing. So I think those kinds of things have been very successful in not only, again, user education, but in educating senior management as well to the issues. Certainly you want to make sure that you're covering all the low-hanging fruit. You know, start with your physical security, move on to the electronic, and, you know, frankly, all you need to do is look down through the last ILPA technology survey, and you can see things that are, you know, so easy to do, some of them at least, are so easy to do, and yet aren't even done. You know, disk encryption is still only at about 50% of firms doing it. You know, blocking malicious sites, malware and so on, antivirus, spyware and so on. You know, those are getting up there. Large number increase this year. I think it's in the 80s, low 80% now. You know, metadata scrubbing, mobile device management. You know, everybody goes nuts with BlackBerries and iPhones and iPads and so on. And while BlackBerry, think of this being kind of the traditional secure email tool, is in great decline here. It's still in use in Canada and Europe. But, you know, firms that have added all the iDevices, there's still more than half the firms that have yet to implement any kind of mobile device management. You know, firewalls, all those things are important. That's the low-hanging fruit pieces.
Jeff, would you say as serious as this is and to do these things you just mentioned, do you find that some senior management teams are reluctant to start? Either maybe they just don't want to know what they don't know, or they just don't have a big budget and they think it's just going to cost a lot of money to do this?
Well, I think you hit on a couple of things, Richard. I think that you know, some people look at the issue as so big, so comprehensive that, you know, there's no place to start. And I would argue that it's very easy to get started. Small steps, you know, crawl, walk, run. You know, you don't have to spend $1 million on a user awareness program. Yes, there's going to be a certain amount of expense that's going to go with, you know, mobile device management, firewalls, and so on. But you really have to start looking at the risks of not doing this work, you know, not having this capability. And again, it certainly plays into security audits that we talked about a little bit earlier. I was in Philadelphia recently, and a couple of CIOs from firms were talking to me about, you know, remediation for one single client was over $100,000. So having these things in place is only going to improve your position and posture with the clients that are going to be giving you those security audits in the first place.
I agree. So, yeah, I'm hoping that we can stem this issue of reluctancy and get everyone on board. You know, so what else is there that they should be looking into?
Well, I think certainly you need to look at policy as well. I know that I'm very encouraged by the fact that information governance, you know, the kind of holistic, comprehensive look at how we manage information is really beginning on the rise. And that to me is exciting because you have so many times when, you know, your policy or initiative gets stopped because it has some issue with partner convenience. And security as kind of the first step in information governance, I'm seeing traction with it, and I'm seeing that, you know, real business needs are trumping partner convenience. So that to me is exciting because that means that not only the policies coming out, but the policies still remain and have teeth. You have some firms doing some very interesting things in terms of their policies. You know, some firms are shunting personal traffic off of the core network. Everybody carries a smartphone these days, so the general idea is, fine, we're not going to expose the business network to your personal email accounts, so you can no longer access them directly from any device that touches the firm network. So instead, you know, they set up private networks that, you know, are able to be used by your cell phones and so on, for you to be able to check all that personal mail and so on. You also have some firms considering business-only policies. And that gets back into phishing and some other things. Now, as part of my work, I've got, you know, Pinhawk email address. I have my own business email address. And so it's funny because I'll get something, you know, from Xerox Copy Center or something from banks and so on, and I'll get it through my Pinhawk account. And I can immediately delete it without looking at it because I know I haven't used any of those business emails to sign up and get alerts from, you know, my bank or, in fact, you know, Pinhawk doesn't use Xerox copiers. So that kind of thing of being able to separate and, again, help the users look at that kind of threat assessment and say, oh, well, this is from, supposedly from Bank of America. Okay, well, it's coming to my business, you know, at lawfirm.com email address, so I know it can't possibly be what it says it is, because I have all that in my personal traffic, and I check that on my smartphone. So there's lots of different things that I think in terms of policy and so on that you can get further down the road, again, with minimal investment. But, you know, it's something that has to be done. The hole's only getting bigger, if you will. And part of that, you know, when we talk about, you know, do you have expertise, do you have the dollars, you know, outsourcing is your friend. There are so many firms, even larger firms, that really don't have, you know, security staff in place. A lot of firms, you can't afford to have a security staff, at least full-time. You're working with, you know, somebody whose secondary or tertiary job in your network area might be security or something along that line. So going out for an assessment, you know, third-party audit of where do you stand and what things do you need to work on, where do you need to focus some of that attention, pen tests, the audits, and so on, those are all really good things to do. And again, turning to the outside third-party vendors, there's no shame in that. You know, they've got the expertise that you need, and they'll be able to deliver the reports and information in a far faster and better comprehensive fashion than you might be able to do yourself.
That's great. And I was just thinking back to your previous comments of your business-only email. You're remarkably aware of spam just because you've separated out your email accounts.
Well, that's something that I have to admit I'm a little anal retentive about, but you know, it goes back to, you know, as you mentioned earlier, 30 years in the industry. It goes back to when spam filters weren't nearly as efficient as they used to be. So I got in the habit of checking my spam filters on a regular basis. I'm still in that habit. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing when you look at, you know, who doesn't have a personal email address? You know, who doesn't have, you know, the need to have online banking or any one of a dozen other things. But that's what the hackers are looking for, is whatever they can use and whatever information they can get through social networking sites and everything else to then in turn, you know, kind of do a customized attack and phish and get the information that they need from you. It's a vicious circle, and one that, again, with education and with, you know, some even very simple policies like that, Richard, make life a lot easier all around.
Agreed, agreed. And I also like your shunting your personal traffic off the core network. So that's a stimulating conversation, I'm sure, at a later time, because we could probably spend an hour just on that.
Indeed. As I said, the biggest thing for me, and that's something that is so simple to do. Most of the time, you've got a guest network for clients anyway. The reason that it's not been tackled maybe quite as early on is because it's an inconvenience. You know, I'm sitting down at my desk. I've got Outlook. You know, I don't want to have a second email account. I don't want to have this stuff. But the need and validity, as I said earlier, is outweighing that kind of convenience aspect. And that's a positive thing, I think. Nothing but positive in that aspect. The growth of the legal industry in terms of its business reaction to these scenarios is very important. It's what allows us to be taken seriously. It's what allows us to not be that weak underbelly that the FBI and MI5 think we are.
Yes, if we get away from that name, it would be nice.
Not particularly flattering.
So Jeff, for those who don't have a large budget, maybe your small law department, perhaps a small law firm, solo firm, where could you go to get information, more information on these topics?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're not a member of ILTA, if you're listening to the podcast and you're not a member, your first thing is to sign up and become a member. ILTA has a wonderful initiative, the Legal Sec Initiative, that is all about trying to set those standards for what firms should be shooting for and providing that information in terms of outlines and everything else. So the best place to go is within ILTA and the Legal Sec Initiative, and you can see outlines for policy. You know, you're not sure what you should be getting as an assessment, there are outlines for, you know, what kinds of things you should be testing for, what kinds of things you should be aware of, how you can be answering some of these questions. And again, just networking with your peers within the organization allow you to say, you know, this is where my particular issue is. This is how I have problems selling this item to my senior management. And, you know, getting the benefit of, you know, hundreds of others in the same situation in similar environments with similar cultures to be able to say, yes, you know, we all want to raise, we want to be the tide that raises all boats.
Very, very informative. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for your time and your thought-provoking insight today. I'm Richard Martinez, and on behalf of ILTA, we bid you farewell. Until next time.
Thank you, Richard.